Now turn to part three. You will hear part of a program in which two racing drivers, Eddie Kiewitz and Jenny Pelaw, are discussing their profession. For questions 16 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C or D, which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 1 minute in which to look at part three.
Well, Jenny, I understand you've had a meteoric career rise in the world of Formula 7, and you're now the top-ranked driver around.
Thanks, Eddie. And I hope to be banging on the doors of Formula 1 fairly soon. Actually, the privilege is all mine to be talking to you, one of the all-time greats of Formula 1.
Of 30 years ago. It's all very different now.
I wanted to ask you about being number one. I suspect next season is going to be my hardest ever, sustaining the mental effort when everyone is out to beat you. I'm now the target instead of the chaser.
For me, it was an asset, not a burden, and I wore it as such.
But at the end of last season, I was 14 points clear. This time, the slate is wiped clean and we all start with the same points tally.
But you have to think that the magic number one gives you a clear psychological advantage. Somehow, you must end up perceiving this number as a symbol.
Okay, that's useful advice.
But I gather it wasn't easy for you. With three races to go, you were having a bit of a wobble, weren't you?
Yes. Tokyo and Brussels were disastrous races. The press were sure I'd blown it, and Brian Norton, the leading race-driving journalist, wrote me off completely.
I wouldn't worry. Brian's well known for being opinionated and outspoken, and I think a lot of people appreciate that. He calls it as he sees it, and I'm sure it was nothing personal.
The important thing is I never gave up on myself. Brian Norton has every right to have another opinion, but it left a bad taste in my mouth. Anyway, he had to eat humble pie when I ran away with the title, so I think he spurred me on. Perhaps I should thank him.
There's a thought.
Eddie, you were winning Grand Prix when I was a baby. One thing I've always wanted to ask you is, what differences you see between Formula One then and now?
Well, we were driving cars that were not actually much slower than those of today, but we had no safety fences or anything. Look, motorsport's always going to be risky, but obviously Formula One has improved so much in that respect. I will say, though, that the mutual understanding of danger made an impact on us, and the drivers formed stronger bonds than they do today.
Today, it feels that you're just, like, flat out. There's no time, not even for yourself. Everyone concentrates on themselves in the team, and you're not aware of much else. So I'm sure you're right on that score.
Interesting.
Another thing that's moved on, of course, is the technology.
Yes. Do you find those simulator things helpful? We never had them.
I think so. It's just like sitting in a real car with a huge screen in front of you, and it jerks to imitate every movement you might make. So we can use it to improve our racing skills. We tend to use it a lot before the season kicks off, because real testing is so limited.
In my day, we received no data from the car, so when we wanted to try out something new, any results came from just interpreting our gut feelings at the time.
Right, but I can really familiarise myself with a new track, so that by the time I go out on the real circuit, I just have to iron out the creases, as it were.
I can see that a simulator can help you iron out your faults, but it's certainly not a fitness trainer.
Sure, that's definitely one significant difference to real life. But maybe that's a good thing. Otherwise, drivers might as well just compete against each other in a simulator.
Quite so.
Eddie, I wanted to ask you something personal. And that is, why you seem to finish all involvement with racing as soon as you retired from driving?
Well, sometimes you just want a clean break. I didn't have anything left to achieve, and things like coaching or commentating held no appeal. As you know, I've got my own chain of Eddie Kiewit's restaurants, and perhaps I just wanted a new challenge. But you know, your supposition isn't strictly true, because I do a sideline as an after-dinner speaker, talking about my life in motor racing. Well, mind you, it's more an irreverent, nostalgic look backwards rather than engaging with today's racing world, so I wouldn't claim to be in the know anymore.
Now you will hear part three again.
Well, Jenny, I understand you've had a meteoric career rise in the world of Formula 7, and you're now the top-ranked driver around.
Thanks, Eddie. And I hope to be banging on the doors of Formula 1 fairly soon. Actually, the privilege is all mine to be talking to you, one of the all-time greats of Formula 1.
Of 30 years ago. It's all very different now.
I wanted to ask you about being number one. I suspect next season is going to be my hardest ever, sustaining the mental effort when everyone is out to beat you. I'm now the target instead of the chaser.
For me, it was an asset, not a burden, and I wore it as such.
But at the end of last season, I was 14 points clear. This time, the slate is wiped clean and we all start with the same points tally.
But you have to think that the magic number one gives you a clear psychological advantage. Somehow, you must end up perceiving this number as a symbol.
Okay, that's useful advice.
But I gather it wasn't easy for you. With three races to go, you were having a bit of a wobble, weren't you?
Yes. Tokyo and Brussels were disastrous races. The press were sure I'd blown it, and Brian Norton, the leading race-driving journalist, wrote me off completely.
I wouldn't worry. Brian's well known for being opinionated and outspoken, and I think a lot of people appreciate that. He calls it as he sees it, and I'm sure it was nothing personal.
The important thing is I never gave up on myself. Brian Norton has every right to have another opinion, but it left a bad taste in my mouth. Anyway, he had to eat humble pie when I ran away with the title, so I think he spurred me on. Perhaps I should thank him.
There's a thought.
Eddie, you were winning Grand Prix when I was a baby. One thing I've always wanted to ask you is, what differences you see between Formula One then and now?
Well, we were driving cars that were not actually much slower than those of today, but we had no safety fences or anything. Look, motorsport's always going to be risky, but obviously Formula One has improved so much in that respect. I will say, though, that the mutual understanding of danger made an impact on us, and the drivers formed stronger bonds than they do today.
Today, it feels that you're just, like, flat out. There's no time, not even for yourself. Everyone concentrates on themselves in the team, and you're not aware of much else. So I'm sure you're right on that score.
Interesting.
Another thing that's moved on, of course, is the technology.
Yes. Do you find those simulator things helpful? We never had them.
I think so. It's just like sitting in a real car with a huge screen in front of you, and it jerks to imitate every movement you might make. So we can use it to improve our racing skills. We tend to use it a lot before the season kicks off, because real testing is so limited.
In my day, we received no data from the car, so when we wanted to try out something new, any results came from just interpreting our gut feelings at the time.
Right, but I can really familiarise myself with a new track, so that by the time I go out on the real circuit, I just have to iron out the creases, as it were.
I can see that a simulator can help you iron out your faults, but it's certainly not a fitness trainer.
Sure, that's definitely one significant difference to real life. But maybe that's a good thing. Otherwise, drivers might as well just compete against each other in a simulator.
Quite so.
Eddie, I wanted to ask you something personal. And that is, why you seem to finish all involvement with racing as soon as you retired from driving?
Well, sometimes you just want a clean break. I didn't have anything left to achieve, and things like coaching or commentating held no appeal. As you know, I've got my own chain of Eddie Kiewit's restaurants, and perhaps I just wanted a new challenge. But you know, your supposition isn't strictly true, because I do a sideline as an after-dinner speaker, talking about my life in motor racing. Well, mind you, it's more an irreverent, nostalgic look backwards rather than engaging with today's racing world, so I wouldn't claim to be in the know anymore.
That is the end of part 3.